The program is furnished by its producer, host, and sponsors.
Live in the studios, and you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland. And as always, it's streaming live at WRCR.com. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Health in 30 brings you 30 minutes of the latest health and medical news and information with leading guest medical and health experts. If you haven't visited the healthin30.com website, check it out. Go to healthin30.com. That's healthin30.com. You can listen to audio, sign up for free newsletters, get all of the information from all of the shows, and more. Don't forget to check it out. Go to healthin30.com. If you have any comments or questions, email us. Joining us today is Dr. Terry Fulmer, professor and dean of the College of Nursing at NYU. Today we'll be talking about caring for the elderly amid the national nursing shortage. Call in with any questions at 845-624-1300. Hi, Dr. Fulmer. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to join you, Barbara. Thank you for having me.
Oh, sure. The elderly population is definitely increasing, and their needs are very specialized. How do you see in your profession as the dean of the College of Nursing, how is that changing towards teaching the students to care for the elderly?
Oh, it's changing a lot, Barbara. And one of the things that colleges and programs and universities across the United States are doing is making sure that they are getting appropriate gerontological educational curriculum in their programs. And at NYU, we have been able to be a big part of that because here we have the Hartford Institute for Geriatric Nursing, where we've been able to develop geriatric curricula, and also we've been able to assemble some of the finest curricula around the country. And each year we have an award that celebrates excellence in curricula across the United States in geriatrics. And so we think that there's a lot of demand for it. We think that there are a lot of good ideas out there about what should be in the curriculum. And in fact, we have assembled some of the very best for people so that we can get that curriculum underway. The American Association of Colleges of Nursing partners with us in our at NYU in making sure that we are getting the material out to the places that need it. They can download it easily because there is an age wave coming and we've got to be ready. Our nurses have got to be ready and they've got to know what's important for best practice care for older adults.
What are you teaching the nurses? In the hospital, it could be extremely chaotic, extremely noisy, very challenging. The patients that are elderly can be very demanding. Their care is very specialized, and their needs really need to be met in a specialized way.
Right.
How are you teaching the students to go along and really give that specialized care? And then once they learn that in the school, though, how is that transferred over into the workplace?
Sure. So we talked about how the students learn it, and that is they have a mandatory curriculum that relates to geriatric care, and it might be in a dedicated course. It might be infused throughout a number of courses, for example, in fundamentals courses, in critical care courses, in their medical surgical nursing courses, care of adults, in their palliative care courses. So the content has to be across a wide range, and also it has to be modified appropriately so that if it's in an associate degree program, if it's in a PhD program, that content is there. Having said that, you asked a good question, and that is, what do we do once the nurses are out there? And what we've done in partnership with over 200 hospitals in the United States, we have a program called NICHE. That's Nurses Improving Care for the Health System's Elders, NICHE. And what NICHE is, it's really a movement, actually, where we've been working on it since the late 1980s, and NICHE is a program that helps hospitals in particular and health systems in general gerontologicalize and have geriatric-sensitive parameters for their practice setting. For example, with NICHE, we have what we call our NICHE toolkit. And some of the things that are in that NICHE toolkit are, for example, practice protocols. And all of these are available on our website at NYU, in our NYU Hartford Institute website. Mm-hmm. And they're all downloadable, and we encourage people to please take them and modify them to their site. So, for example, what are some of the common syndromes that older people have to deal with as families, as people get older? Well, for example, they might have trouble with urinary incontinence, or they might have trouble with delirium, and they might need strategies for assessing and treating delirium in the hospital setting. Prevention of falls is critically important. We know that falls can result in fractures and terrible morbidity and mortality in older people, and so we have to make sure that we are very sensitive to the prevention of falls. Prevention of skin breakdown, pressure ulcers, for example. Then there's also areas such as depression in older adults. Nurses have to be sensitive to the signs and symptoms of depression so that they can rapidly work with their interdisciplinary team to treat and manage depression. Medication mm-hmm. problems in older adults. We know that older people can be on 5 to 10 medications by the time they're in their 65-plus years, and they have 3 to 5 chronic diseases or disorders. The medication management and safety around medication management is a crucial element that nurses have to be sensitive to. So we have practice protocols that specifically address each of the items I just mentioned. And I would add, we have a practice protocol around advanced directives, protecting right. patients' mm-hmm. rights. Discharge planning that's sensitive to the needs of the older person.
Right.
And thinking about, for example, pain management, so important mm-hmm. and certainly more prevalent as people get older.
Let's kind of break this down slowly if we can, because I know you just mentioned a whole bunch of different topics for the listeners out there. Let's talk about medications first.
Sure.
Because when the person is elderly in the hospital, they may be on tons of medications.
Right.
Now, if they're the only one there, if they don't have an advocate with them trying to decipher all of this information that's being thrown at them mm-hmm. really in a quick way sometimes,
mm-hmm.
How is that being taught to the student? Because when you're in this clinical setting, it's really much different than when you're working as a nurse in the hospital, because you don't have only one or two patients if you're on a general med search floor. You can have 8 patients. So you're trying to deal with all these different patients. You're trying to give instructions, say, specifically for medications. But when you know you have to get to another patient's room, how is the best way that can be taught to the patient to go over each medication, to let them know what they are, what the side effects are, should they take them with food, without food?
Sure.
I mean, there's so many elements involved with that. So what's the best way that you see for students learning that? Because mm-hmm. the situation is definitely different from school to the hospital setting.
Right. And so a minute ago when I was giving you that mm-hmm. laundry list, I was
right.
talking about practicing nurses.
Okay. Oh, okay.
People get their baseline nurses, in their universities, and mm-hmm. we touch on these things, but it takes an extraordinary amount of specialized knowledge to give great care to older adults.
Yes.
And so what I was just talking about mm-hmm. are the best practice protocols that we use with registered nurses around the country.
Okay, so they're already in place,
in practice,
right.
And what
okay,
they really want to know is how to do a great job mm-hmm. with their patients around these areas. And you just touched on a different aspect. So first we talked about students, just then I was talking
okay.
about practice nurses. Now you just talked about the patient.
Right.
So I'm with you. And
okay.
what we're talking about now with regard to the patients is as follows. I heard you say, what if they don't have an advocate? And I'm going to tell you that any patient who has a nurse mm-hmm. has an advocate. And what they have to do is work with that nurse as their advocate. If you come into the hospital and you don't have a family member, a friend, or a loved one, you have an advocate called the nurse. And so I'm very bullish on that. The second thing I would say
that's a really great point, though, that you
yeah.
brought that up, because a lot of people may take a step back and not want to ask so many questions to the nurse because they know they are so busy, so they kind of hold back a little bit.
They should never hold back.
Right.
Nurses are always busy. Mm-hmm. They always will be busy, and they're there for you, and they want your questions, and they will definitely want to hear your voice. And everybody can tell me the story of a bad nurse, and they can then tell me 10 stories of a good
mm-hmm.
nurse.
Okay.
So, you know, just like you're always going to have a bad plumber in the batch, but then you're going to tell me that you had a great plumber. So here, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. By and large, I'm saying that the nurse is going to be the advocate. And so thinking about that, you asked a very important question. That mm-hmm. is, how does the nurse work with the patient to think about the complexity of medication? And the platitude that we use, not a platitude actually, it is the golden rule for thinking about medications in older people is start low and go slow. So you start with the lowest dose possible and you go very slowly with increasing a dose or increasing an additional medication. And we're teaching patients and we're teaching families and nurses to think very carefully about what they can get rid of rather than what they can add in terms of a medication, because we know that interactions among medications can be very serious, so that's important.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that you have to be culturally sensitive when you do any teaching about medications with families, patients, and nurses, by the way. So, for example, if it is your culture to, for example, use more traditional, say, Eastern medicine, and if you're used to herbs, and if you have particular belief systems about that, your healthcare team has to be sensitive and knowledgeable about that so that everybody can get the best results. When it comes to thinking about medications in general, it is very important for people to make sure that they are telling their nurse or telling their doctor when they have multiple prescribers. So if they have, for example, I'm going to say a dentist who has just given them an antibiotic, their physician won't know that. And so they have to be able to say, or my nurse practitioner just added something for my arthritis. The keeping a list of your medications in your wallet or in your Palm Pilot or wherever you choose to keep it is very important so that you can pull it out when you're with any provider, dentist, nurse, social worker, physician, and say, this is what I'm on. And if we're going to add something, you should know this. So that's, if they could just keep a list,
yeah,
that would be so, so important.
That's a great idea.
Never put medications mm-hmm. in the same bottles together,
right.
Ever, ever, ever. And never swap your medicines with your friends. Never say, well, I don't need these anymore. You can take them. Because pills, as they get older, they could get stronger. They could get weaker. People have different allergies, different side effects. Never share your meds. And that's something I really want to underscore.
Do you find a system that works really well for the elderly to take the medications where they know exactly what time they should be taking them,
mm-hmm.
what they're for? I mean, mm-hmm. is some type of chart available?
Sure, there are multiple. This
okay.
is a very sophisticated area, actually.
Mm-hmm.
There are charts. And let's talk about that for a minute. So mm-hmm. when you said, are there systems for the elderly, I'm going to reply in the following way. Every older person's different. We
yes.
have 90-year-olds
okay. right.
who are physicists and going to work every day,
mm-hmm.
and then we have 60-year-olds who are very frail and have
mm-hmm.
lost their memory.
Okay.
So I'm most interested in the individualization of this information. So for some people, it's as simple as just having a sheet of paper that they print out that says breakfast, lunch, dinner, and they check it off.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't even need that. They just, you know, set their alarm on their watch and they've got it. Other people need more reminding, and you've all been into your drugstores to see that there are Monday through Friday plastic cap tops where
right.
you put them in. And that can be very useful not only to the older person who lives alone or to an older person who might live alone, but their family member or their friend checks every day to say, did you take your pills or not?
Mm-hmm.
And so putting them in the pre-poured containers that have reminders on them can be a helpful way to do it. As people become more dependent on memory aids, there are things that are called electronic monitoring caps. So the cap of the bottle, every time you take it off, it registers with a computer chip. And if you place that cap on top of an uploading device, you can look at your computer screen and see the instant that the cap was opened. And
wow.
therefore, you can get a pretty good idea of what time that pill was taken or if it was forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of commercial products that are available. There are also commercial products that do that and have a person hooked to the the electronic monitoring system. So if that medication cap, when it's downloaded, indicates that the person forgot their noon medication, a woman in, you know, another state might call and say, "Hi, Mrs. Fulmer, I noticed that you forgot to take your digoxin this morning. You should take it now." It's expensive. It's out there. The other kind of technology, of course, to know whether or not, suppose somebody's profoundly confused or, you know, God forbid, if they have profound dementia or Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. In those cases, they're not living alone, and they have a lot of support systems. And so it becomes medication management by others. But I think when you're talking about medication by self, then those are some of the issues that those are some of the strategies that are available. Visiting nurses come in and do pre-pours, for example. The Visiting Nurse Service of New York City sees over 40,000 patient visits a day, which is quite extraordinary. And a large number of their patients need pre-pour. So they come in on a Monday and they set the pills up, and then they might go back on Wednesday or they might go back on Friday. And the Visiting Nurse Service of Westchester and Rockland, all these counties, have very wonderful ways of helping people monitor their medications. Side effects of medications can be very individualized, and so it's again important that the older person make sure that they shouldn't be timid about voicing worries, because if they're worried, they should be saying so, and that's what we're here for.
Okay, yes. Now they do, some medications do have a lot of side effects, so like you said, they'll voice their concern. They should call their healthcare professional and let them know what's going on.
That's
and maybe
right.
They could be adjusted or changed somehow.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's great information, though, from really if the patient was in the hospital, then into the home setting of how to monitor their medications independently. When they're in the hospital, other issues that involve the elderly patient could be falls, which you had mentioned earlier on. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
Sure, we could talk about that.
Okay.
And what we know is that only about 10% of falls result in fracture, but boy, those fractures are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, it can be a profoundly a very profound marker of a downward spiral for an older person who then loses their reserve. So everything should be based on prevention of falls.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we know about falls in older people who are in hospitals? Well, we know they're often around change of shift time, when people are distracted. We know they're around times when people have to go to the bathroom. They get up quickly and they need to get to the bathroom. And so helping people manage such routine things as making sure that they go to the bathroom on some regular basis. Thinking about if you give somebody a diuretic, you know from your nursing education
right.
about when it's going to kick in. And so you can anticipate that person's going to need the bathroom, and you should help them, because these are some of the moments when these bad things
I just want to jump in there right at that moment. Only because I just finished a whole series for online about
sure.
the whole nursing shortage. We've
yep.
delved into that topic
sure.
in depth. I understand what you're saying about the diuretics, and you know
mm-hmm.
you can kind of jump in there. But what, I mean, in reality, in a situation, sometimes in a hospital, the minute someone really needs to use the bathroom facility, that call bell goes off, I mean, they expect somebody to be there to help
mm-hmm.
them. What, I mean, how can that change? I mean,
well, you
sometimes
know, Maddie Mezzi and Liz Capizzuti and Marie Bolts
mm-hmm.
and Hung Su Kim work with me here at the Hartford Institute.
Okay.
Also, there are geriatric centers for nursing excellence around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're working on is gero-friendly hospitals.
Okay.
So there are hospitals that advertise that they are baby-friendly.
Okay.
Or pediatric-friendly. Well, we think there should be gero-friendly hospitals. And a gero-friendly hospital is one that anticipates these common problems. One of the acronyms we use when we think about common problems is our SPICES acronym. And every nurse should be thinking about SPICES. That is, skin problems, problems with eating and feeding, incontinence, confusion, evidence of falls,
mm-hmm.
or sleep disorders. Your question to me is about the shortage and what we can do about it. Well, we can create gero-friendly environments where you make sure that everybody is tuned into these problems and that they're deployed effectively.
Why is it that every hospital is not on board with this, though? To truly take
yeah.
care of the elderly in the specialized way that we should be, every hospital should be doing the same exact thing.
Right. I think most hospitals are well-intended
mm-hmm.
and that it's up to us in academics and also in the different organizations, like the American Geriatric Society is meeting this week in Seattle, and they'll come up with a lot of great recommendations. I think there are a lot of professionals working very hard on this, and you might have seen the article this week in The New Yorker, mm-hmm. which was The Way We Age Now, written by Atul Gawande. And what he talked about was that, you know, we absolutely have to get this right because of the longevity factor and the fact that there will be so many more people who are frail and needing these services in the very near future. In the next 20 years, the whole profile of the country is going to be extraordinarily different. And,
right.
and we have to get ready for this. Mm-hmm. So I think that hospitals are trying to be more and more ready with mm-hmm. what they have to do. And our experience with NICH is that they're very interested in learning best practices in order to give the best care and also to deploy people as effectively as possible, because there is a shortage of not just nurses but healthcare professionals. There's a shortage of dentists.
Mm-hmm.
There's a shortage of occupational therapists, respiratory therapists. And so all of us in universities are gearing up. For example, at NYU, we have doubled the number of our students that from a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
and we intend to double it again. And what we want to do is make sure that we can be ready.
Right. Have any students been turned away from, because I know there's been a shortage of professors, isn't that correct?
It varies geographically,
mm-hmm.
and yes, there is a faculty shortage.
Right.
We do know that about 90,000 applications last year, that's one number, it ranges in numbers, but about 90,000 applicants were not able to enroll in programs because there was a shortage of either clinical spaces or faculty.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, there are a number of professional organizations in the United States that are working on this highly intensively to get it where it needs to be in the very near future.
What's the time frame, do you think, that things will start
to turn?
Turn around.
There are some data
mm-hmm.
that I heard recently in a lecture that are not published yet, but there are some data to suggest that we could be seeing a little bit of inroad.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we'll know when we hear it from the employers. We've got a long way to go. There's a serious nursing shortage. We've got to make sure that we increase our programs, that we increase the size of our programs, that we get our faculty through the pipeline as quickly as possible. It's serious, and the public deserves excellent care by registered nurses, and
right.
We need to move quickly on this.
Right.
Again, some of the organizations are the American Academy of Nursing, the American Association of Colleges of Nursing, the National League for Nursing, just to cite a few who are working on this day and night.
Okay, great. So hopefully
right.
things will turn around
and
quick.
And by the way, the government is working on it.
Well, that's good.
Yes. And state governments are working on it. So it's quite exciting to see the amount of people who are very concerned on behalf of the public.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, with the number increasing so dramatically
yeah.
and the needs are just so demanding and so challenging, it has to change. It can't stay where it's at because
right.
They're so valuable, the elderly,
right.
and especially when you can, you know, have time to listen to their stories and, you know, as you're taking care of them, it's, you know, you really need to concentrate and really go all out to take care of them. And
right.
it's definitely specialized. Okay, do you want to go into... A few more issues that you're doing. I know you're actually will be celebrating the anniversary, right? The 75th anniversary.
We have our 75th mm-hmm. anniversary for our wonderful College of Nursing at New York University next Thursday. And so we will be joined by nearly 500 people who will come from around the country to hail NYU, which has been such a leader in producing some of the nation's best deans and directors and finest bedside practitioners ever. So it'll be a wonderful event, and it's at the Hyatt, New York. And if any NYU alums are out there, please, please come.
Oh, great. Okay. And the GRN model, the Geriatric Resource Nurse model, that was instituted or developed how many years ago?
We started that in Boston in the early to mid-80s.
Okay.
And we were at the Beth Israel Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, working with the Harvard Division on Aging, which was based there. And under the leadership of Joyce Clifford, who's a spectacular nursing leader, we were given the wonderful authority to go ahead and make a difference in improving care for older adults. And so as a nursing practice, as a nursing service at the Beth Israel, they the leadership of that hospital created the environment for us to make that happen. And how did we do that? When you think about a 300, 500, 600 bed hospital, mm-hmm. you can understand that you got to be creative in how you're going to get knowledge to the bedside. And so some hospitals have what are called ACE units, acute care for the elderly units. And those ACE units are wonderful, and they're highly specialized. And it's been proven that you can decrease length of stay and that you can decrease iatrogenesis, that is, hospital-induced problems, when people are on ACE units. But not all hospitals have ACE units. And so that's where we thought, well, what would we do differently? So at the Beth Israel, we decided, we began our conversations about geriatric resource nurses. So each unit would have a nurse who volunteered to be the expert on that unit around problems related to older people, and that they would work in partnership with the advanced practice nurse who had a master's and a specialty knowledge in geriatric nursing in order to get up to speed with these care problems and what the best practices were.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to the various units and got one or two or three nurses who said, yes, I'd like to do that. And we began providing them with the textbook information and with the care protocols and helping them. And they became the unit-based resource for the other 20, 40, 60 nurses on that floor who said, you know, I have an older patient who looks like they're beginning to get a pressure ulcer. Why doesn't somebody go get Heidi Picard and have her come help, because we know she's a geriatric resource nurse.
Mm-hmm.
So that took off and has turned out to stand the test of time. We moved it to Yale New Haven. We got wonderful funding from the John A. Hartford Foundation to test the model of the geriatric resource nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And today it's used in the majority of our niche hospitals, over 200 niche hospitals, mm-hmm. where they say, we're going to train our geriatric resource nurses. They're going to be the eyes and ears on the floor for geriatric common problems. They're going to be available to their peers, their colleagues, mm-hmm. the nursing staff, and they're going to really make a difference in care outcomes. And we have proven in a number of our studies that a geriatric resource nurse can improve the care outcomes for the patient.
That's terrific. That's really, I mean, that should be an eye opener too for patients out there if they're trying to check into the hospitals too to see what services are offered. And that's one important aspect if you have an elderly family member or they themselves are elderly and are in need of care.
Right.
What's the website again for that?
If you're using Google, mm-hmm. all you need to type in is NYU Geriatric Nursing.
Okay.
But the website can be www.hartford.ign, that
okay.
means Institute for Geriatric Nursing, .org.
Okay.
So www.hartfordign.org.
Okay.
And that website will lead all over. And if you forget that, just go on the College of Nursing website and there's a link.
Okay, great. The nursing shortage, it's so complex, so many layers, no easy solutions. The elderly population are increasing, and their needs are specialized and challenging. They are highly valued, and we need to care for them. Thank you so very much, Dr. Fulmer, for joining us today, and happy Nurses Week to everyone out there.
Thank you.
And next week, join us. We have two very special shows. First, at a very special time from 5:30 p.m., Boomer Esiason, former NFL quarterback, sports broadcaster, and honoree at the 2006 Freddie Awards for his outstanding service to public health for the Boomer Esiason Foundation, will join me to talk about cystic fibrosis and his fight to find a cure. May is National Cystic Fibrosis Month. For more information, go to healthin30.com and find out what you can do to help. And at 5:30 to 6, Dr. Peter Rogers, he's board certified in pediatrics and in addiction medicine. He will join me from 5:30 to 6 to talk about the epidemic among teens, underage drinking. Learn the facts and find out why underage drinking simply isn't cool. Last week, we talked with attorney Jonathan Stanley from the Treatment Advocacy Center, and we talked about mental illness. Are state laws preventing the mentally ill from getting the help they desperately need? If you missed that show, the audio will be on the healthin30.com website, so check it out and listen. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. Have a great week. Stay healthy, and I'll see you next week. I'm Barbara Ficarra for Health in 30. Have a happy Nurses Week to all those nurses out there. Thanks for all you do.
AM 1300, WRCR, Spring Valley.
AP Radio News. I'm Ross Simpson. U.S.-led forces have arrested suspected Shiite militants in Baghdad who are accused of smuggling powerful bomb components into Iraq from Iran.
Roadside bombs have blown.